is going to have its annual fundraiser, the Salem Kaiser chapter of the NAACP, on Saturday, October 15th, 5:30 to 9 at the Salem Convention Center. And if you wish to buy tickets and attend, please go to sknaacp1166.org. That's sknaacp1166.org. And don't forget Portland City Hall tomorrow at 3. Folks are going to be there for 24 hours. And you are listening to KBOO, Portland 90.7, and you're listening to Labor Radio, of, by, and for the working class.
Yes, sir. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline coming up next. And Teresa and Bill, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Okay. Right.
Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
That was sung by a prisoner during a performance in the Oregon State Penitentiary about solitary confinement. This prison performance inspired Within These Walls, a Portland community event. Here, Within These Walls, on Prison Pipeline, October 17th at 6:30 p.m.
I know why the caged bird sings. This cage is my stage. When I am on, I'm free.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma Lugo, and I'm here today with Coral. And Coral is a prison activist and a homeless advocate. And Coral has been in town for the RAP conference. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Coral?
Yeah, so I work for an organization called RAP, which stands for the Western Regional Advocacy Project. And that's a coalition of 9 organizations across 3 states, and one of those states is Oregon. And yesterday we met with the 3 RAP members in Portland to talk about building up a statewide campaign that is the Homeless Bill of Rights campaign, which currently is starting to build in 3 of those states.
What is the Homeless Bill of Rights?
So the Homeless Bill of Rights is an organizing campaign, and the purpose of it is to fight the criminalization of poor and homeless people's existence. And part of that has been moving a piece of legislation called the Right to Rest Act, which would legalize sitting, sleeping, lying, eating, and existing in public if you're poor.
Mm-hmm. And the allied organizations were Street Roots and what else?
So the core members in Portland are Street Roots, Sisters of the Road, and Right to Survive.
Oh, great. All organizations that do really important work advocating for the homeless. Here in Portland, we've seen a huge increase in like tent cities popping up all over town. And then just as quickly, we hear about homeless sweeps. There's been a lot of sweeps here. There was a sweep in Southeast Portland of a camp specifically for women who were survivors of domestic violence. And they set up a camp, and then the neighbor said, oh, we don't like these women camping in our neighborhood. And the police came in and swept them out. And there's been tons and tons of sweeps all over town. What are you working on with the RAP in order to try to, you know, stop that from going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why the Homeless Bill of Rights campaign exists and why RAP exists. So that's happening in all of the cities that we have members in. So that's happening in San Francisco, that's happening in Oakland, that's happening in Los Angeles, it's happening in Denver. We can see it's like pretty much the exact same type of police violence is happening in all of these cities. And the really amazing thing about RAP is that I'm the organizer for RAP, so I get to hold all of these different state experiences at the same time. And it's helpful to be able to strategize around what are folks doing in Denver? Is that helpful in Portland? What are folks doing in Portland? Is that helpful in LA? And it really helps to build a really powerful movement so that we can resist the police violence that's attacking our folks all the time.
Mm-hmm. Typically when the police do a sweep of a homeless camp, what happens to the people who are living there in their homes? Are they, do they take their personal belongings? Are they arrested? What's typical?
Well, it kind of depends on the circumstance and who is doing the sweep. I know in San Francisco, where my office is, the sweeps that are usually happening are folks are having all their stuff confiscated. They're being displaced from wherever they're camping, and oftentimes they're being cited or arrested. So it's like three really serious things that are happening at once. And that happens also in the other cities too, which pretty much decimates anyone's life that they have living on the streets, which is already at risk of a lot of violence. And if they suddenly don't have access to any of their things, including their gear to protect themselves from the elements, including their medications, including, you know, so many of the things that housed people just have access to because they have houses, all those things are just destroyed in sweeps. They're pretty much the most violent thing that police can do to houseless people.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some moves in different places to say that sweeping encampments is cruel and unusual if there's no shelter for folks to live in. And of course, we know from living in this country that there is no shelter for folks to live in. Usually when they say that, they're talking about the shelter system. And RAP really pushes back against that and says that the shelter system's not actually a suitable place for people to live and that people need housing. And mm-hmm. So if they're going to sweep people, sure, sweep them and then give them some free housing. Mm-hmm. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. If not, then leave people alone.
Mm-hmm. So you must be hearing about stories of sweeps and criminalization of the homeless and incarceration all up and down the West Coast. Is it pretty bad everywhere?
Yeah, it's ramping up everywhere too. It seems like even in the short time that I've been working with RAP, I've seen really an increase in all of the places that we've been organizing. And in part, I think it's a response to the organizing, because when you organize against this type of violence, the state usually responds by ramping up the violence. So
mm-hmm.
in part, I think that's what we're seeing. And we're also just, in all of these cities, we're seeing massive displacement, massive gentrification. And like all of this is just an element of what neoliberalism has done to our society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a pervasive, constant element in our communities. The increases in rents are making living in housing unaffordable for low-income people and people who are marginalized. And at the same time, they're also facing increased criminalization for just trying to survive out on the streets. So we're actually here today. We're going to be talking to you about what's been going on in your hometown of San Francisco. But I wanted to make sure that we connect that with what's going on in Portland. So we'll probably be jumping back and forth a little bit between Portland and San Francisco today during our conversation. You contacted me recently in KBOO to talk about the efforts going on down in San Francisco to close down the to keep the proposal for a new jail from being built in San Francisco. And I think that it's a really good story because it's interconnected with critical resistance and fights against jails regionally and nationally, because the more prisons we build, the more jails we build, the less money we have for public resources, for education, for housing. And so it's directly connected to the homeless issue, because if there's more jails, then there's less shelter space. So let's start off with kind of a broad picture. Can you tell me what's going on in San Francisco with the jail?
Absolutely. So we're kind of in a different moment now than we have been for a lot of the San Francisco jail fight. I've been involved for a few years, and a bunch of other organizers have been involved for even a few years before that. So it's been a long fight already, and we know that it's going to continue to be a long fight.
Could you tell us, first of all, what is the fight about?
Yeah, so there was a proposal to build a new jail in San Francisco. There's currently a jail that's at 850 Bryant, so it's usually just called 850 Bryant. And there was a proposal to rebuild 850 Bryant because it was seen as being seismically unsafe, which means that if there's an earthquake, that there's potential for folks to have a lot, that there's potential for folks to die, or it's bad to have a building that's seismically unsafe. So they were wanting to build a new fancy jail that could house everyone. And so there was money from the state, which comes from an entity called the Board of State Community Corrections, the BSCC. And the BSCC gives out money to local jail projects to help fund it. And so San Francisco got a huge amount of funding from the BSCC. It got $250 million. It was $80 million.
How many people... let's start with a little bit broader. Just a jail is where people go if they're... It's not like if they go to San Quentin or to some of the other... It's not a prison, is it? I mean,
no.
Technically, it's a jail is for like the state or for a county.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of... Folks that usually end up in the jail is something that has happened in San Francisco, and they're either held in the San Francisco jail until they're tried, and then they would either go to a prison or have a longer stay in the San Francisco jail or be released.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also, in California, there was a movement called Realignment that was supposed to address overcrowding in the prison system, and that was to move folks from the state prisons into local county jails.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also now people in the San Francisco County Jail who have really long sentences, which is not usually what happens in county jails.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of how the prison industrial complex is expanding in California right now, is it's like there's been so much pressure on this overcrowding in the state prisons and how unsafe the state prisons are. So now it's moving out into the jail system, and in doing so, now they're trying to build new jails all across California,
mm-hmm.
because there's suddenly a new need to bring folks from the state prisons.
And jails can be pretty brutal places. Here in Portland, we have the Multnomah County Jail, and I know several people who have been through the Multnomah County Jail or go through it many times in the course of a year, especially homeless people. I know lots and lots of homeless people here in Portland who get arrested for sleeping. One of the most common ones is being arrested for sleeping in a park between like 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. And they get run through jail and they get fined and they have this record, and then they get put back out on the street, and then they get arrested and go into jail again. Is it similar in San Francisco?
Absolutely. It's almost identical. Mm-hmm. And The most common reason that people are inside of the San Francisco jail is that they're held in the San Francisco jail is because they're unable to afford bail. So mm-hmm. I think it's 80% of the people that are currently in the San Francisco jail are there because they can't afford bail. So that literally just means that the jail exists to house poor people and houseless people.
Mm-hmm. And when I think of people I know who have told me stories of being incarcerated and held without bail, or because they can afford to pay their bail, a lot of people I know are people of color, too. Is that common in San Francisco also?
Absolutely. I mean, that's all part of the gentrification displacement process. It's an attack on communities of color, largely. Mm-hmm. San Francisco, at one point in time, was a place that people of color could live freely, and now there's 3% of the population in San Francisco is Black, and 56% of the population in the jail is Black. So that,
oh my goodness,
that tells you something about what kind of violence is against the Black community in San uh-huh. Francisco.
Uh-huh. That's insane. So what has been going on with, I mean, what are some alternatives to, first, give me the update on what's kind of changed recently. You were just going into that when we got into this broader conversation.
Yeah, so the jail fight has been in a lot of different phases. And so a lot of the efforts for many years were to fight that new proposal and say, we don't need a new jail. Like, if you are trying to funnel all of this money into a new jail and say that that's in our name, we say, no, we don't want that. And we want our folks in the community, and we can take care of our own folks. So if you're thinking of locking them up, just send them to us and we'll deal with it on our own terms. So that was the fight for a long time. And then that actually escalated to a point where the Board of Supervisors, who decides lots of things about funding in the city, in San Francisco, they unanimously voted to reject the funding from the state for the new jail, which was huge and has never really happened before anywhere, because to politicians that's free money, even though it does actually have to come back through the taxpayers' money. But they rejected the jail funding. And so now we're in kind of a new phase where it's like, that was a win, a huge win, because
yeah.
The Board of Supervisors said, okay, you all have convinced us that a new jail would be wrong for San Francisco, and we're going to try something else instead.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a testament to the organizing that happened. And I'm really honored to have organized alongside so many folks who really were amazing in this fight.
So this is, if I can frame the language a little bit in terms of something that I think I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It sounds like part of what you're saying is that there's been a long struggle to try to keep San Francisco from building a new jail. And it's actually achieved something through this vote.
Mm-hmm.
So how do coalitions like that work? I mean, how long has it been going on? How long has the struggle been going on? And I mean, what do you think is next?
Yeah, so the coalition is called the No New SF Jail Coalition, and it's a pretty broad-based coalition. There's organizations that are doing poor and homeless people's rights organizing. There's organizations that are doing queer liberation organizing. There's organizations that are doing policy work. There's prison abolition organizations. It's kind of like a pretty diverse crew of people who've been working on it. And it's been about 3 years that folks have been pushing this mm-hmm. fight, and finally getting to that win in late last year.
So it's a pretty broad spectrum of community organizations, and it's been a long struggle over 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So what do you think is next? Do you think that the next step is to say, here's our alternatives to jail, or what's going to happen next?
Yeah, so I mean, all along the whole fight, we've been saying this is what the alternatives that already exist in the community, these are alternatives that could exist in our community that we could build. And now we're kind of in an interesting place where, because we did so much organizing to stop the jail, and we were so involved in the legislative strategy and really fighting it on the grassroots, and fighting it in this legislative way also, that we've been invited to participate in this working group that the city of San Francisco is holding. So it's kind of a strange also group of people. It's like the sheriff's department, the Department of Public Health, the Department of Public Works, And then organizations from our coalition, so prison abolition organizations, queer liberation organizations, and all those people are at the table right now at this working group trying to figure out what to do instead of building a jail. And that's, we don't really know exactly where that's going right now. It could go a lot of places, but we also in the No New SF Jail Coalition have a kind of shadow working group to that working group, which is to empty 850 Bryan of all of its prisoners and make sure that there's never a jail in San Francisco ever again.
Mm-hmm. So a big part of the movement is not just to keep a new jail from being built, but actually from closing the current jail that exists, the one that houses about 1,300 people or so at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah. So and that's kind of the amazing thing about this fight, too, is that there's been sort of a two-part victory, is that we've stopped new expansion from happening, and we're also talking about using the city's own points about how the jail is unsafe for people, how it's seismically unsafe, how it's physically unsafe for people, using that and saying, okay, well, then we're going to empty it now. We're going to let everyone out now. If it's seismically unsafe, then no one should be imprisoned inside of a seismically unsafe building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I want to take just a little bit of a diversion. I'm a trans woman. And so whenever I do Prison Pipeline, I always look to see if there's a trans angle on the show. And I'm wondering specifically how the prison affects trans women and trans women of color, and what are some alternatives that are proposed for people who may end up running through the system because they're trans or there's some relationship to their gender identity that they're being jailed for.
Yeah. Well, I'm a trans woman also. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really integral part of the San Francisco jail fight is talking about trans women and our lived realities and what happens when we are being profiled by the police. And two organizations that have been involved in the jail fight are TGIJP, which stands for the Transgender, Gender Variant, Intersex Justice Project, and the St. James Infirmary, which is a clinic for sex workers. And both of those organizations have been really helpful in the fight to talk about that they already are doing things that protect trans women from violence and keep us safe and in our communities. And that really investing in trans women in a gentrifying city in which trans women of color especially are under attack. Last year there was a woman named Taja de Jesus, who was murdered in San Francisco. And there is a coalition called Taja's Coalition that responded to that. And they've also been involved in the jail fight and talking about violence against trans women that happens daily and leads to the jail system.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you. So the only thing that I'm thinking that people might present as... you know, if someone was asking me a question about what's going on with this and how can we use this as an example here in Multnomah County, people might say, well, you're trying to close down the jail in San Francisco, but look, San Francisco is already, like, you know, one of the most expensive cities in America, and it's already this incredibly privileged, affluent, mostly white community, and so, sure, they'd want to get rid of their jail. They'll just send their jail over to Oakland or... you know, maybe down to San Jose or something. So what is your response to that? I mean, is there a reality that you're just going to end up shipping people across the bay to Oakland and putting them in jail there? Or what's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a threat. And it's been a common thread throughout the whole coalition to talk about how this is just one fight and it's one place to start stopping the expansion of the prison industrial complex entirely. And we've really tried to reach out to other jail fights that are happening in other cities to link up and talk about what happens when we win, because that also from the state money, it also can just go to a different jail. And we don't want a not in my backyard sort of mindset. So we're really trying to take interest and investment in other jail fights and help build up other jail fights where they're not already happening. And we're mostly doing that through this coalition that exists in California called Californians United for a Responsible Budget, which really just tries to starve the budget of all prison and jail funding money.
So if we were looking at a model of how to do something like this here in Multnomah County or in Portland or in Oregon, what are some steps you would recommend activists take in order to, you know, I just can't imagine this, but because this is Portland, I know Portland, but I think it's a reality. It's definitely a reality that we could try to work for. But if we actually tried to close down the Multnomah County Jail, what would be some steps we might take to try to do that here in Portland?
Well, I think that there were a lot of things that were effective in San Francisco that might not be effective in Portland or somewhere else, because a lot of the things that were effective in San Francisco also used the rhetoric about San Francisco being a liberal city, which is ridiculous and untrue, but we utilize that.
A lot of Portlanders think of their city as liberal, even though if you ask anyone who's encountered the police, they have a completely different perspective, especially people of color.
Right. So that was definitely something we used, but really just building the strong and diverse coalition that could speak to a lot of different needs. And we really invested in the legislative strategy, which was hard for a lot of us who are community organizers and really are kind of disgusted by engaging in that system. And we kind of trained each other up and spoke truth to power and did a lot of research about what the different supervisors were interested in and who we could bring to talk to them to get our point across. And we were also doing all that while having a grassroots organizing strategy that was strong and using direct action, using civil disobedience to also get our point across. So there was many different strategies that were happening at once with a broad-based coalition that I think really made this fight effective.
It's a really interesting strategy because it's sort of like you're trying to convince the community of, the community that you reside within that jails are not necessary in your community. And here are some of the alternatives to jail. And it sounds like you're also looking at it from a really comprehensive perspective. Like you're thinking, you're anticipating what the social service needs are of people who would normally be run through the system. So one of my last questions might be, what would you say to people who would say, well, what about, you know, every now and then there's somebody who's really violent. Like there's someone who kills his wife or who harms his children or someone who's, maybe under the influence of drugs and is really violent. What do we do about people like that?
Yeah, the most common question of all. Mm-hmm. I can speak for myself and not from the No New SF Jail Coalition that I think that when those acts of extreme violence happen, which are rare, that they too have a root cause. And sometimes that root cause is white supremacy, or sometimes that root cause is misogyny and patriarchy. But also holding that even in those extreme cases, and that imprisoning people doesn't actually make anything better, even in a case of extreme violence, that too still exasperates the problem. Many people who've had that kind of experience with extreme violence also like have love and care for the person who perpetuated that violence, which is a complicated thing that can't really be addressed in the legal system. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they don't have love and care and they feel extreme rage and they just want that person to be away from them. And I think that there's ways that all of that can happen without jailing and imprisoning people. Mm-hmm. Like what we're talking about is accountability. So that doesn't mean that if someone murders their kids that we're just saying that's fine. It's not fine. It's really not fine. But there's ways to keep people accountable that are not just putting them in a cage, because that's kind of just like, we don't want to even deal with that problem. And what people who are fighting for prison abolition do is we say, yes, we do want to deal with that problem. And it's going to be messy and it's going to be hard. And it might involve a accountability process that lasts years. And it might be difficult for everyone involved. But at the end of it, we can actually have something that can transform how we deal with harm and then how harm happens at all.
Mm-hmm. And obviously most of the people who are in prison because they happen to be the wrong color or they happen to be the wrong socioeconomic status. So, you know, the vast majority of people are in prison because of the war on drugs or because of the, war against poor people in this country, and they're not because they're violent, you know, recidivist perpetrators. So I just want to thank you. We're running out of time, Coral. If people would like to find out more information about closing down the San Francisco jail or about RAP or any of the organizations that you advocate for, how can they find out more about the jail project and how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so there's a website for the No New SF Jail Coalition that is nonewsfjail.wordpress.com that has a lot of different information about what we've been up to and materials if folks are wanting to organize. There's a lot of different materials that people could replicate. You can always give me an email at coral@raphome.org. You can also check us.
That's Coral, C-O-R-A-L, at Raphome, R-A-P, home.
W-R-A-P, home.org.
Okay, W-R-A-P, thank you.
You can also check us. There's three of us from the No New SF Jail Coalition are going to Ecuador this June to talk at the International Conference on Penal Abolition about the San Francisco jail fight, and I'm one of those people, and I'm excited to learn from an international perspective what people are doing to fight the expansion of the prison industrial complex and what we can take back to learn.
Well, that's so fantastic. Well, Coral, thank you so much for being on Prison Pipeline. We really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intent.